it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the Greg Bedard Patriots Podcast with Nick Cavins.
He's Greg. I'm Nick. You know that. You also know that this episode is brought to you by Prize Picks, the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. We are also brought to you by Game Time Tickets. Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the tip-off. Check them out at gametime.co. Again, it's gametime.co. Before we get to the draft, Greg, let's talk about the big news that came out yesterday morning. Of course, I'm talking about Christian Barmore. 4 years, maximum extension worth of the deal, $92 million. The guaranteed money is $41.8 million. This is a move you and I have talked about for months. It's finally done. Your thoughts on the deal?
A couple things. I think I'm happy for the Patriots and their fans that they are starting to get proactive about these contract extensions. I don't know what the deal was with Belichick towards the end. You know, for a while he used to do a good job of this, but he just stopped doing it. I mean, along with a bunch of other things, and it helped lead to his downfall here. But I just think that it's just smart to take a player, a good young player, and reward him, get him locked up early before you're paying through the nose. And we've seen it in recent years with, like, you know, whether it was Devin McCourty had to go to free agency and almost sign someplace else to get his contract extension. Dante Hightower, same sort of thing. Chandler Jones was traded before he had to get paid. It's no way to run a football organization, you know, and run a football team where guys are coming up in your system and you have continuity. I mean, basically, Elliott Wolf, who I'm going to guess is spearheading this, this is stuff that the Packers used to do regularly. You would draft and develop, and when you identified that, all right, we can count on this guy, because you don't really know until you get him in the building, but you should know your players better than anyone. And if they're doing the right thing and being professional, and certainly you have to answer the question about, like, all right, well, how is money going to change them? And I think that that's a huge question anytime you do this. And if you can check the boxes, then get it done, because then you don't have to be scrambling every year and all that stuff. So I think it's great. Related to Christian Barmore himself, you and I have talked about him a lot over the years. I haven't delved into Bilbo Twitter, but I'm sure people are out there saying, like, well, Bedard said this and that. And I don't know how many times we have to be over this, have to go over this. But the fact of the matter is, Christian Barmore fell in the draft. There was a reason why he fell in the draft. And 100% credit to Christian Barmore for proving the teams who took him off their boards completely. And I know I talked to a couple of teams that did. And it wasn't anything egregious. And again, I'm not going to completely spell out what they were telling me, because it exposes my sources, and especially their information from certain sources could dry up, because it's the only place they could get the information. But right. It was nothing egregious. It was just basically a lot of people had questions about intelligence wise, how good Christian Barmore would be in the NFL on his own, where they thought that, like, at Alabama, they had it so dialed in and could get him to focus that was really the only way they could play, that he could play. I give 100% credit to Christian Barmore that he has proved all of those teams wrong. And he almost did it from the jump. I watching him on film, there are zero questions about his football intelligence on film. People got him wrong. And that happens in the draft process. And I just give full credit to him. I just hope he earned this. He became a much better run player this year. He should now be a full-time starter. He did that last year, at least the second half of the season. He has proved that. We always knew he could rush the passer. Now he can do run defense on an every down basis. He has become a complete player. And and he has also become a true professional. Not that he ever was, but all he's done since he got in the building with the Patriots is keep his nose down and work hard. He's had some injury problems. That's been his only drawback. But other than that, he has been dialed in. They've been impressed with him in the building, and he checked all of those boxes, and they rewarded him, which they should have done.
Any chance, because I don't think there's a chance, my own opinion, but any chance that Duggar, Owenu, and Barmore would have all been done if Bill Belichick was still here?
Duggar. I think only Duggar. I think Barmore, they probably would have put off further. You know, Bill would have been like, well, you know, I'm still not 100% sold. He's had injury issues there. You know, how's money going to change him? And like, sometimes I do think Bill made good decisions in that regard. Like, for example, Chandler Jones. That was a guy they were never going to give a second contract to because they didn't trust him, especially after the synthetic weed incident at Foxborough Police. And also Aqib Talib was a guy that they were not going to give a lot of guaranteed money to. And instead they offered him, you know, a sort of pay as you go thing. And he got something different from, I think it was Denver. I think Duggar is probably the only one that Bill would have done.
All right, let's get to the draft now. Before we get to the first pick on the third day, Laydon Robinson, I have a question for you. I tweeted this on Saturday in real time. The Patriots were set to draft at 103. Denver trades into 102, and they end up drafting Troy Franklin, outside X wide receiver. A lot of people thought he would be gone before the fourth round. Possible that Denver jumped the Patriots to draft Franklin, and Franklin was the Patriots guy at 103?
So that was 103. It's possible, but I doubt it, Nick, just from my vantage point. And again, I'm not a professional at this in evaluation. To me, he was too much like Tyquan Thornton. And I think they wanted, you know, from the two guys they picked, they want bigger, stronger, tougher guys. And I think Troy was too much like Tyquan for them. I just think that Denver really wanted him, and you know, maybe they thought that the Patriots might have some interest, but no, I don't think he would have been the Patriots guy.
All right, so let's look at the guy that they did pick at 103, Laydon Robinson, of course, interior offensive lineman. Did you like it?
So I'm intrigued by his film. I will say I liked his film more than I liked Caden Wallace's film initially, and I got to dive more into this, and I will in the coming weeks at BSJ. We'll have breakdowns on all the draft picks, some of the free agents, you know, that they've already signed, like Okorafor, and just so we know, we have a good basis going into the off season practices, exactly, you know, what's going on, what do the Patriots have, and things to watch, whether it's in OTA practices or mini camps and things like that. But I like Robinson in that, you know, he has some versatility, 6'5", 313 pounds. I know he was a guard. You know, we'll see. I think he has a chance to play tackle, but definitely versatile. And I think that the Patriots are just, you know, like, they're getting a bunch of guys that almost look not totally identical, but, you know, they play a lot of the same way. And again, I think, even with their offensive line picks, and I wouldn't say Wallace is all that, you know, physical right now or anything like that, but it does seem like the Patriots are trying to get bigger, tougher, stronger, faster when they can. And I think that goes for the offensive line. But I like his mentality. I think he's more powerful than Wallace. I think he has a chance to be a pretty good run blocker. And so, you know me. Anytime you can spend more assets on the offensive line, I'm all for it. To me, it does sound like, I think a lot of these things, Nick, you look at it and you say, was this front office on board with what Belichick did in previous years, especially with the interior? They took three interior guys last year.
Yeah.
And City So showed promise. Mafi was a project. Jake Andrews really didn't show me anything. Maybe he's got a future at center, but to me, it looks like in a lot of different ways, this Patriots front office were like, yeah, we need some do-overs and we're going to do it right this time.
This was my least favorite pick just because of the position, and that's unfair to Robinson. But, you know, looking at how much they invested on the interior offensive line over the past couple of years, to use a pick at the top of the fourth round for another interior offensive lineman, I was not a big fan of that. However, I do wonder, and I tweeted this in real time, this isn't crazy hindsight, I do wonder about Cole Strange. And it kind of goes in line with what you're saying, Greg, but he hasn't been healthy. He's not healthy right now. The last we read is that he might not be ready for the beginning of the year. And so if you're telling me that there is serious question about Cole Strange's future, whether it's from a health standpoint or a scheme standpoint, then drafting Robinson makes a hell of a lot more sense to me. Because if you're not going to believe in that guy, in his ability to either transition to what Van Pelt wants to do, or just the ability to stay on the field, or the injury is worse than we know, then I get it. Because as you said, Mafi is a project. I don't think you can expect him to do much of anything this year. You've got So. Andrews is more of a center, as you said. You've got Leverett, who they signed as a free agent. But if Strange is not ready to go, or they don't believe in the guy, whichever one it is, maybe it's both, then you're going to need somebody on the left side. And if it's Leverett, now you have Robinson as that backup that you believe in. Or maybe you start Robinson if he proves himself in camp, and you have Leverett behind him as kind of the backup swing guard, so to speak. And so you've got So on the right side and Robinson on the left side. If that's what went behind the pick, then I have a lot less issue with it.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that the future of Cole Strange is interesting. And certainly a big question mark, and I think they're certainly giving themselves options. They have multiple options at tackle. They have multiple options at guard. I will be very interested to see with the new offensive line coaches, Peters and Kugler, what exactly they do with Cole Strange. And I think we've talked about this in previous years, but you know, when I evaluated Cole Strange coming out and you know, once the Patriots drafted him, I saw a center. His athletic ability. And my wonder is, you know, when he does come back. Now, the whole question is, and I do think they put more, if I recall correctly, they put more on the center in this scheme than they did in the old Patriots scheme. So the quarterback was responsible for a lot in the old system. The center now does a lot in terms of protection. Can Cole Strange handle that mentally? I don't know the answer. I'm not saying he can't. I'm telling you, I don't know the answer to that, probably because he hasn't had to do it. But if I have a question about him being, you know, ever being able to be strong enough to play defensive tackle in the AFC East, especially where you go up against a lot of really good defensive tackles, and he has a lot of trouble holding up to the bigger physical stronger guys. He just does. That's been the staple of his career so far. And I think he can handle it mentally. I'm bringing him back slowly. I'm training him as a center to be David Andrews' successor, you know, in the year or two until Andrews is done.
You brought up Peters and Kugler. And when you look at the big picture of this offensive line, you've got Owenu, who's going to be first time, full time right tackle. City So, who's still young, still developing, right guard. Not many questions about David Andrews. Left guard, as we're talking about it, Cole Strange, number of questions there. Robinson really only played on the right side, So he'll be swinging to the other side to play left guard. Then you've got you got Chucks Okorafor, who hasn't played more than like a handful of snaps on the left side at tackle in the NFL. Played it in college, but hasn't done it since then on a regular basis. You also have Caden Wallace, who was strictly a right tackle at Penn State, moving to the left side. There's a lot on the plate, Greg. Is it possible to even overstate how much of an impact Peters and Kugler have to make sure this offense goes when they kick the football off in September?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I completely agree. And, when people talk about, like, how much is the offense going to improve next year, what have they done to really improve it, and blah, blah, blah. One thing that they don't really take into consideration is that, you know, they basically had five offensive line coaches in 5 years. That's a freaking epic disaster. Like, yeah. Nobody can play offensive line like that. And you wonder why the offensive line, like, kept, other than like Michael Wenu and David Anders, just kept like going down. And so to me, like, these guys have to be big keys going forward. And I think they will, just stability. And like, you know, I do have questions about Peters, because, you know, he got passed over in Cleveland, but he learned under Bill Callahan. And that's like learning under Dante Scarnecchia, basically the same thing. And if we had a guy who had spent 4 years under Dante Scarnecchia and he became offensive line coach, we'd all be like, well, you know, he's all set. And Kugler has an excellent reputation. So they have two technicians, teachers now. And so a lot of these guys, and even, you know, equate this to, you know, Cole Strange is finally going to get real coaching. Who knows what the hell he's going to look like after that, but there's no question that the offensive line coaches are a big key. And it's one of the reasons I'm optimistic, more optimistic than others, about the offense being somewhat acceptable this year.
And it might have been a case of Andy Dickerson just being the better coach. You know, I mean, we can't forget that the Patriots, they were looking at Dickerson as their O-line coach. He picked Cleveland, and then that kind of set the chain reaction where Peters came in, you know, to kind of play around here and possibly be a name. And then they also, let's not forget, they bring in Kugler. So it certainly looks like, Greg, the Patriots had Dickerson at the top. He decided to go to Cleveland. Next guy was Peters, but they might have felt like Peters needed some help. He might have not been like the guy. So let's bring in Kugler to kind of help him as well. So it could have just been as easily Cleveland liking Dickerson more than Peters, just like the Patriots liked Dickerson more than Peters. And Cleveland gets Dickerson, Pats get Peters. The evaluations too, Greg, we hit on this a little bit on Friday night, but they're huge. You know, like Elliot Wolf said, that the coaching staff told him they feel like Wallace can play on the left side. If they get that wrong, that Wallace pick, you can question it. No doubt about that. If he can't play the left side, do they try to swing Owenu to the left side? Chucks Okorafor is another guy. Greg's a very busy man. That phone's ringing. Inside sources.
Sorry.
I want to talk to Greg right now. But you've got Okorafor moving, you know, to the left side. That's another evaluation from this coaching staff, that he can play on the left side. They've got to get those right. All right, let's move on to pick 110. Wide receiver, UCF, Javon Baker, Greg.
Love it. You know, I like how they got, you know, they're not hugely different guys. Again, I think this is they're following sort of the Packers blueprint for how they go and get, you know, receivers. I think this is, you know, he's, I wouldn't say he's a flyer, but he's certainly more explosive than Polk. Polk is a tougher, he's like a more athletic Jacoby Myers. I would say Javon Baker has a chance to be sort of in not as fast, but similar in explosiveness to like a Greg Jennings, from the Packers. So, I love how they double dipped at wide receiver. I think that I have a lot of faith in these guys being able to identify wide receivers that are going to be pros. And again, I think this all goes back to what we talked about after the first 2 days, Nick, where I think, you know, they took the big swing on Drake May. They definitely went for upside. They went for risk. They pushed their chips to the table for a potential special quarterback if they do this thing right. And then from there on out, I think they just were like, we need to get players, good football players, tough football players that have a high floor that are going to play in this league for a long time. And I think that like all of the guys that they drafted, I think look like they could play in this league. How good they'll be, we'll see. But I think after what Bill Belichick did, they just basically were like, we need to get guys in here who can play. And then we'll start to stack our talent as it goes forward. And that's sort of, you know, what Ron Wolf did when he started rebuilding the Packers as well. Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less in two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball and hockey's postseason, which is coming up. I can't wait. I know Nick is going to be freaking geeked up for all that stuff. That's for sure. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball, hockey, baseball entries today on Prize Pick, America's number one fantasy sports app. This week on Prize Picks, I'm selecting Jaylen Brown for more than 25 points, David Pastrnak for 2 goals or more, Tyler O'Neill, the big thumper, for 2+ home runs this week, and Kenley Jansen for 2 saves. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. That's CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy at Prize Picks.
What I like is the fit between Polk and Baker. I love how those guys' games fit together. I think Polk is kind of your do-it-all. You can move him around. He's not afraid to get in the middle of the football field. While Baker is that, you know, true X guy who can make, you know, big plays downfield, I just like how they fit. The pieces seem reasonable to me. And when you think about the Packers, you see what they did with Jordan Love, right? I mean, they took the big-armed, somewhat rough mechanically, needed some work, quarterback with upside. Then they followed that up with, you know, Christian Watson in the second round. I talked about this on my podcast today. They followed up with Watson in the second round, eventually back in, 22. Then they had Dobbs in the fourth round. You can look at Watson and say he's your Javon Baker. You can look at Dobbs as your Jalen Polk. It just, it makes a lot of sense what they're trying to put together here. So I thought the fits especially made just a lot of sense over the weekend. All right. Only defensive player drafted, Greg, was Marcellus Dial in the 6th round. Played some corner, played some slot in college. Some people say he could end up playing some safety. Could he be the possible developmental free safety we were looking for?
I think that's a stretch. I think there's a lot of questions, Dial, about his, football IQ and how he's able to do with that. I mean, I think to me, I read this as sort of a possible Miles Bryant replacement, but again, bigger, stronger, and tougher. And, love Miles, but a lot of his issues came down to his lack of size. And so, Dial, I think, is just, he's another, I think, high floor guy. I think he certainly has the physical skills to play in this league. And I think the Patriots will just get him in, see what he does well, and then go from there.
It was, I think, a couple of weeks ago on this podcast. I said, just draft Drake May, just draft Joe Milton, and let him throw bombs all camp. And here we are. Drake May, 3rd overall. Joe Milton in the 6th round. Bazooka Joe coming to town. These guys are going to be throwing bombs all camp. Did you like the Joe Milton pick? don't let me down,
it's
Greg.
It's certainly interesting. it's certainly interesting. And I've already ordered my Pat the Patriot helmet to wear at training camp to make sure I don't take any strays from the hill at practice. You know, it's funny, like, because everybody says, and I gotta dive into his film. I'll say this. I was surprised that they went with a similar physical profile to Drake May. And I know that sounds strange because that does make sense. Because, you know, why not go with a guy who is, if he does end up being the backup in time, like, you know, he's big, strong, good arm like Drake May. You don't have to change much. Good athlete, can run, all that stuff. They're similar. So I get it. I thought they would go with somebody a little bit more with a higher floor, like a Carter Bradley or the Pratt kid from Tulane. I thought they would go with one of those guys. I'm not surprised at all that they doubled up at quarterback. We talked a lot about that coming in. This is something the Packers have done repeatedly over the years. I wrote a whole column off of it. I mean, I even forgot about some of the people that the Packers had done it with. And I just want to go over, like, just real quickly for people. So, you know, Wright went, despite trading a first round pick for Brett Favre and having Ty Detmer on the roster, who was a career backup type guy, the Packers drafted Mark Brunell in the fifth round after Favre's first season, where Favre didn't exactly light the world on fire. They ended up trading him for a third and a fifth. And we all know Mark Brunell was really good. They drafted 95. They drafted Jay Barker in the fifth round. Okay, he didn't work out. In 98, they drafted Matt Hasselbeck in the sixth round. He was flipped as part of a first-round trade-up and a third-round pick from Seattle. I totally forgot about Aaron Brooks, that he was one of the Packers quarterbacks that they developed. Craig Knoll was sort of a backup. You know, and then, you know, because I heard this from people that – I heard from a few people who didn't like the Milton pick or any quarterback pick from this perspective. Well, that's no way to build up your rookie quarterback. Like, as soon as the other guy does something well, then he's going to hear it. Like, I don't want to hear any of that bull crap. Like, if you're worried about – that's Zach Wilson crap. That's Kenny Pickett crap where I don't want to compete, you know, all that. No, if your third overall pick can't handle – competition and a guy behind him pushing him, then I don't want to know about him. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he finally gets the job. Favre retires, unretires, whatever, after the 07 season. Rodgers is given the job. Guess what the first thing Ted Thompson did? He drafts Brian Brohm in the second round and Matt Flynn in the seventh. And, you know, and you had all this stuff going on. So Aaron Rodgers, who's already dealing with enough pressure succeeding Brett Favre, now he's got to deal with a second round pick up his rear end. You're like, Joe Milton in the fifth round, I'm fine with it. And if Drake May can't handle it, and I know that he can because he's a baller and he doesn't care and he's got swag, as you said the other night, you know, I'm fine with it. One more point on this, and I heard Mike Lombardi, he didn't like this because he doesn't think you can develop two quarterbacks at the same time. I disagree, at least the way the Patriots have it set up. If you're going to build up Drake May from the bottom up, why not try it with Joe Milton? And then, you know, if it pays off, then, you know, you trade one of them, probably Milton, at some point, just like the Packers did with Brunell, Hasselbeck, Aaron Brooks, all this stuff. At the end of the day, I really liked it. I questioned the player a little bit, but the thought process, I like it.
Totally agree with you, and especially in the sixth round. Take the lotto ticket. If you're able to develop this guy, as you said, Greg, you can trade him. You know, quarterbacks are always wanted in the NFL, so see what you can get from him. And then we wrapped up the draft with Jaheim Bell, tight end, Florida State, picked in the seventh round, Greg.
So this is an interesting cat. Again, bigger, stronger. I would call him a tight end, fullback, sort of hybrid guy. You know, not the greatest athlete in the world, you know, but, you know, sort of a straight line guy, not a lot of swivel in his hips, but he can do a lot of different things. I mean, I think he can run up, he can line up at running back, fullback. He's a very poor man, sort of Deebo Samuel. He's not even close to that. He's not ever going to be that, but he's got a little Deebo in him. He's got a little Kyle Juszczyk in him. you know, as we see with sort of this in some of the flavors of the Shanahan West Coast offense thing, like, you know, he's an intriguing athlete that, again, you bring him in, see what you can do with him, but he gives you options and it could give you some versatility if he ends up paying off.
You remember the draft of Dalton Keene, and he was supposed to be the H-back of the future, and
yep.
That did not work out. And you used, a third-round pick on Keene, I think? Well,
they traded up big time, well, at least in that round, third or fourth. But Asiasi and Keene, they both traded up for. And the Keene trade was completely – the Patriots lost big time on the draft charts.
Nice. Well done. Well, now you've got Jaheim Bell as a seventh-round pick. And he could play a little bit of that for you if you want him back there. And, you know, he's good at catching the football in the flat and making a play. He's going to be good, I think, you know, down the seam in certain situations. He brings yak potential. So, look, is he going to be your starting tight end? No. I think you obviously go in with Henry and Hooper. But I like the idea of an athletic, developmental tight end that you can move around a little bit. And looks like a pretty good fit in AVP's offense. So in the seventh round, I thought it was tremendous value. I don't know if he's going to be great by any extent, but I thought it was tremendous value at that point. All right, let's run through some lightning round post-draft questions. I've got a bunch of them for you. Did you hear anything, Greg? Because it's been reported in other places. Our guy Mike Reese, who does fantastic work. Did you hear anything about the Patriots trying to move back up into the first round?
Yeah. They definitely tried to get back up in the first round. The Bills were one of the teams that they talked to. I think they talked to more teams. I think they were targeting, as Mike reported, I think they were targeting one of the wide receivers. You look at the way things fell. I think it was either Leggett and or Coleman. I tend to think it was Leggett just because, even though I mocked Keon Coleman to the Patriots, I think that Leggett was just a little bit, he's got more explosiveness. Coleman, you know, would have been a good option for them too. You know, I just think it probably would have been Leggett. I was surprised that Leggett was still available there. That might have been the Patriots' reaction too. When I mocked Coleman, Leggett was way gone when I did it. And so, yeah, I think they definitely tried to get back up. And now I will say, Nick, you know, while we're on this, you know, my big criticism of the Packers, the Patriots in this draft, it wasn't, you know, not being able to trade up, because I do like Polk and I think that he's going to end up being really good for them. And I do think they got into a situation where they had a bunch of guys rated the same way. My issue came with them not trading up for a better tackle than Caden Wallace. I think that they got surprised by the tsunami of second level tackles that all of a sudden went off the board. I would have liked to, and I thought going into the draft, I thought they'd be more strategic about having a tackle with more left tackle upside and say, all right, we're going to go and get them no matter what. We don't really care what the cost is. We're going to go get them.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you thought they were aggressive enough. So it answers that question, what you just said. I would also remind people that it's not only, hey, we got to move up to get this guy. We got to move up because left tackle upside, like Greg said. I also think it's more difficult for the Patriots to make a move like that because of where they're starting from on the offensive side of the ball. Like if you're making that move, you're giving up something. You're giving up maybe multiple picks. And that's tougher for the Patriots to do than other teams. If you're the Chiefs and you want to move up for Sua Mataia, well, you're the Chiefs. Like, you're not worried about future draft picks, future compensation, picks later on in this draft, because you just won the Super Bowl. So you're more willing to part with some of these picks in the future because you're already there at the top of the mountain and you think that Sua Mataia is going to be a guy that can maybe perfectly slot in at left tackle or right tackle within the next year or so. For the Patriots, they have a lot of holes to address. So it's not just Wallace versus Sua Mataia or anybody else that was drafted there, Rosengarten, and any of the other names that you could bring up. It is Wallace plus what you got versus that guy. So Wallace plus maybe Robinson, maybe Baker. Would you be willing for for Patriots fans that are frustrated, and I get it. I was disappointed when I was doing my podcast live on Friday night. Trust me, I understand the disappointment when they didn't get up to find one of those guys in that group. But from 30,000 feet, the way this draft fell, and we didn't know that in the moment, would you rather have Wallace and Javon Baker, or would you rather have Sua Mataia? That's really the question that Elliott Wolf is answering. And as much as I would have loved the upside left tackle, I'm telling you, I would rather have Wallace and hope the coaching staff is right and can get him to the left side if it ended up with me getting Baker, because I'd rather have Baker and a tackle than just that left tackle.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I have no issues with that.
All right, let's talk trades. Reese's Pieces again. He tweeted out, he wrote that Minnesota offered number 11, number 23 in the 2025 first round pick. In return, they wanted 3 from the Patriots and a couple of mid round picks. Is that a joke? Because it feels like a joke to me.
Yeah, I mean, if that was their best offer, that's no offer at all. I mean, I need it had to be, and we talked about this going in, it had to be at the minimum to even start the conversation. It had to be the 2 first round picks, a future first, and then something else in the future or a player. That's the only way I would have considered it. I would have hung up the phone, been like, dial tone.
New York offered number 6 in a 2025 first, reportedly. Not nearly enough.
No, that's a joke. No.
Yeah, like they want to swap the pick and give you a first rounder next year. What are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Did this strike you with all of the talk about Jonathan Kraft and Robin Glazer behind the curtain playing Wizard of Oz? Did this draft, Greg, strike you as an Elliott Wolf production through and through?
100%. This was basically like a typical Packers draft. And so to me, any argument about, you know, the Krafts influencing anything, I think it's just somebody looking for something to talk to. It's not based in reality. To me, these were, when I think of Packers drafts, I think of scout drafts. Like, these guys are like, they're diving into these people. They're finding these people. And, you know, some people might, you know, they might be like, all right, well, you know, there was a flashier guy or a bigger name and stuff like that. You know, that's never what the Packers are about. I mean, again, I talked about it the other night, but like, you know, this pick, especially of Polk, like, just reminds me so much of like Jordy Nelson. And the thing is like, you got to be patient. And I'll be interested to see how this goes overall in New England. But, you know, you go back and look at Jordy Nelson's stats. And they brought him in as like sort of the third, fourth guy. His first 3 years were like not great, but he was a good player. He was just biding his time. And then his big break happened in that Super Bowl where I think he caught like 12 passes. And then he sort of took off from there. I think he's third all time on Packers receiving charts. And so, you know, even if it's slow progress, like, the Packers would reward these guys. And I think they signed Jordy Nelson to a contract extension before he had really done anything in the league. Rodgers was the same way. They signed him like midway through his first year, and they went 6-10 that year, and he got a big contract extension. So to me, when I look at the players that the Patriots selected in this draft, it reminded me a lot of the Packers in that these are sort of scouts picks. These are guys that they're beating the bushes for.
All right, back.
The Celtics have vanquished the Heat and are now on to the Eastern Conference semifinals, where they will have home court advantage again. Who wouldn't want to be at TD Garden to soak in the great atmosphere there? Well, Game Time is an authorized ticket marketplace of the NBA, which makes getting playoff tickets even faster and easier. Prices on the Game Time app actually go down the closer it gets to the tip-off. Killer last-minute deals, all-in prices, views from your seat, and the lowest price guarantee. Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets, and it's super easy. I love the seat view component, Nick. I don't know how you feel about it. I will not buy tickets to any sporting event unless I can get a view on where the seats are going to be. Maybe I have a little Fenway fatigue, but on the app, it says right in there, when you're about to buy those seats, they give you a panoramic view of the seats. I love that component of it. Take the guesswork out of buying NBA tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account and use code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem the code CLNS for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price, guaranteed.
Let's look at the wide receiver room, Greg. How's it shake out? You've added Jalen Polk. You've added Javon Baker. You have KJ Osborne. You have Kendrick Bourne. You have Pop Douglas. You have Juju Smith-Schuster and a host of others. Right now, and a lot can happen as we know, but right now, how do you see the pecking order in that room?
Well, I'll just say it from this perspective. I think that Kayshon Boutte's gone somewhat soon. Again, I'm not reporting this. I'm just telling you what, you know, my impression. They bring in two receivers. I think that Juju's gone at some point, even though Juju was seen right before I got there at there's a driving range in Medway. And Juju was there
nice.
The other day. Just interesting fun fact. I think I missed him by like 5 minutes. I think Juju's gone at some point. Maybe they can get something for him. Maybe a seventh round pick. I don't know. And I think that Tyquan Thornton's on the spot. He's got to show something, stay on the field very soon when OTA start mini camps. And then we'll see from there. But I think if they had to line up right now, starting receivers, KJ Osborne is definitely one. DeMario Douglas, and I would say Polk is sort of the third wide receiver right now. With Kendrick Bourne, we got to see how he is health-wise.
Is the thought of a trade for a wide receiver one vet dead?
I don't think so. I think the odds have lessened. I think the Patriots are more inclined now to see where these guys are in camp. Certainly through mandatory mini camp, but they'll still be trying and see what shakes loose. I would just say the percentages went down a little bit, but I still think the odds are good, at least 50-50 that they do that.
On a meter from 0 to 10, what is your concern at left tackle right now?
I want to say about a 6. And from this perspective, and it's interesting because I was thinking about this earlier while driving around and doing errands. And by the way, I had a dream last night, and I was at a table with Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. Like, I need help. Like, I need a vacation or something. Like, I don't. What's going on in my life?
You need a couple weeks off, my guy.
Seriously, I'll say from this perspective, I have full confidence that they will get good to representative play at right tackle, right guard, center, and left guard. Okay. And I think I heard Brian Hoyer talk about this on NBC Sports Boston during the draft, where he was telling these guys, and I made this point to Felger, I've made this point to other people, that like, if you have one weaker tackle, it doesn't really matter if it's the left tackle or right tackle. Obviously, you'd rather have the franchise left tackle, but if you have a freaking ass kicker at right tackle who never gets beaten, like, you can help the left tackle. Like, as long as you know what the deal is, you have good coaching and you have a good offensive coordinator to figure it out and not just leave guys on an island like Matt Patricia and do dumbass crap, you can figure it out. So I'm less worried about left tackle than I am just filling out the line with good players. That's my priority, is getting four good offensive linemen, and I'll figure out left tackle when it comes to it.
Got a few more for Greg, but first I remind you that we are brought to you by Prize Picks, our friends at Prize Picks. That code is CLNS, and also Game Time, gametime.co for Game Time tickets. You want to check those guys out as well. And while I'm plugging everything under the sun, I'll plug BSJ, $50 for the year. Giardi, of course, one Greg Bedard and others doing work there. So $50 for the year at BSJ. Is really, Greg, you know, I look at this between the wide receiver room and the offensive line room. It just feels like this coaching staff and this front office saying, all right, fellas, we got a bunch of you thrown in there. The best of the best stay. So fight for your jobs. It feels like this is going to be a highly competitive camp.
That, and you know, as I wrote my column on after the draft, like I think the scouting staff has, and this is again a Packers tradition, the scouting staff puts a lot of pressure on the coaches. They're basically like, you know, all right, we're giving you sort of two middling wide receivers. We get a guy who might have a chance to play left tackle, like go deal with it. And so, yeah, I think the competition's great on this roster. I think they've upped the compete level, which I would say it's fair to say every year, but I think that there's an incredible amount of pressure on the coaches, especially the offensive coaches, with all the changes, all the additions. You got to put in a new scheme. You're dealing with two rookie quarterbacks. You know, you're having Jerod Mayo basically having to trust, and I asked him this question, you know, during the draft, about him basically having to trust guys that he has no clue about. He has no relationship with, has no basis, has never seen this offense up close before. Like, there's a lot of pressure on the coaching staff from Mayo to the offensive coaches.
Completely agree. Does Joe Milton have a chance to make this roster as its third quarterback?
For sure. You know, it's what's funny is, like, everybody talks about, and it's true to an extent, that, like, he's not sure where it's going. I don't know. When they show those highlight packages and even him, like, at the combine throwing the ball, like, 70 yards, he makes some pretty damn good throws. I mean, yeah, it's very inconsistent, but it's not – some people talk about him like he has no idea where it's going. He's got a chance. And, like, I'm intrigued because, like I said, I have a lot of – people that I trust in the league believe a lot in Alex Van Pelt and Ben McAdoo when it comes to developing quarterbacks. And so I'm intrigued to see what they can do.
All right, last one. We'll end with this. We got to end with a Drake May question because he's the new man in town. What would your plan be? What would your plan be, Greg, for Drake May? How are you handling him this offseason? People are saying, oh, sit him for a year. You have to sit him for this long. You have to sit him for this long. How do you handle the young man?
I leave everything open. We will see because, you know, like we talked about, Drake May knows, he has heard a lot of the criticisms, knows the criticisms, has a throwing coach, comes from the family he does. I'm sure he's been working on a lot of, you know, his footwork stuff and things like that with different people. And so it's not like he's hasn't done anything since like the end of the season. You know, could he be ready by week one? Yeah, I don't rule that out. My preferred process for Drake May would be he does not play at the earliest until the second half of the season. Ideally, if they're out of it, the last three or four games, just to get some experience, because the one thing that you don't want to do, and you just don't want to rush a guy who's going through a lot of changes. And like we said, it's not only footwork, it's also his motion. His throwing motion is way too long, and that's got to be tightened up. The problem is, and you saw this with Blake Bortles, is that over time, like if you rush a guy, his fundamentals, he reverts back under pressure. And you don't want to kill all that progress. So, you know, I want him to have a really long runway with development and don't rush things.
He's Greg. I'm Nick. That is your full wrap of the draft and Christian Barmore's contract extension. Hope you all enjoyed it. We'll be back later in the week with the pod. Until then, be well.